I have a verse that I've been thinking about this week. I'd like to share it with you. Matthew 25, starting in the 14th verse. We've all read this before. It says, "For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. Unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey." As I read this one and thought about the one that had a lot of ability to do things, he was given 5 talents. And there was one of them that was just given 1 talent. And then it goes on to say, this man that was fitting to travel, the servants that he had, he gave this one 1 only because he knew that's all he could handle was 1. It said he gave it to them according to their several ability. And I've thought about for myself, sometimes if we're not careful, because we have been given just 1, we can look around at other people that can do things so well, have so much more ability than we have. And we could look at this one. We all know the story that it goes on down. And when he came back, when he returned to see what they had done with it, those that had a lot of ability, they had been able to turn it and make it a profit for him. The one that only had 1 talent, it says he dug and put it in the earth and just left it there. Didn't go spend it. He didn't get rid of it. It was still there, but he didn't do anything with it. And I've thought before, well, you know, he just didn't care. Well, he may have spent his time thinking, you know what, these others can do it so much better than I can. Don't think I can do it as well as they did. And so he did nothing. And sometimes we could do the same thing. I can do the same thing. Look around at others that can do it so much better and say, because I can't do it as well as they can, then I'll do nothing. I'll let them take care of it. And there is a place for me always to remember that I have a dependency upon the Lord. I'd like to look at that verse, because we don't ever want to come to a place that I feel like, you know what, I can turn a profit for the Lord on my own. I'd like to look at John 15 and the 5th verse. It says, "I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit." So the only way that I'm going to be able to bear fruit to begin with is by abiding in him. There's no way that the branch, you cut it off and throw it out separate from the vine, and it'll die. It'll not produce any fruit. The same way with us. And it goes on down and says, "For without me, ye can do nothing." That's what I need to always remember. But then if I'm not careful, I'll stop with that and say, you know what, I can't do anything, so I won't do anything. And then we can run into trouble, because there is another verse that needs to always be hooked onto that one, to realize I can't do it in myself. But then it's the verse that in Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. I won't be able to do it on my own, that it be of any profit. But I'm not going to rest in that and say, okay, I'll do nothing. But instead that I'll go to the Lord and say, I tell you what, here's what I have. Is there anything that you can do with it? I'd like to go to another verse in John, because I think about this tonight as being for the young people. But I tell you, just because we get older doesn't mean we come to a place where we say, okay, now I can do more for the Lord. We can be my age and still be, you know what, still be telling the Lord, I just can't do it. I got these fears. I can't handle it. And we end up reaching the end of our life and just having to tell him where the 1 talent was that we never even did anything with. This one in John 6:9, where they were saying, you know what, it's time to feed the people and we don't have any food to give. And here is the answer that came. Philip answered, fifth verse, Philip said, "Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat?" And this he said to prove them, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, saith to him, There's a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes. But what are they among so many? You know, that one talent person will take a look at that and say, you know what, I got a little bit right here. But I look at all those that need it, and it don't look like it'd go anywhere. But I think about this lad written of in the scripture. And I don't think the disciples said, I tell you what, here is, he's the only one that's got food. Now, let's surround him, corner him, and take it away from him. And then maybe we'll be able to do something with it. You know, I believe that boy said, you know, I don't know how this could help at all, but here's what I have. And I hand it to him to be able to use. And I want to tell you, I think I saw that happen this past week at Monarch. I've been thinking about this, and I mentioned it Wednesday night, but the young people weren't in here. And I feel like it. I want them to hear it as an encouragement to them. Saturday night service was a good message. Not as many went to the altar as they had on other nights. But Kent Wilson went to the altar and got saved. And at the end of the service, you know, just like has been done all through the meeting, end of the service, Brother Danny Adams was closing up the service, and he said, tomorrow after lunch we'll be having another baptizing. If there's anyone that wants to be baptized tomorrow after lunch, be ready, and we'll take care of it then. And then I've never heard anybody say this before, but then he just added one more little comment. He said, but if there's anybody who wants to be baptized tonight, we'll do it tonight. And, you know, Kent could have said, well, you know what, tomorrow afternoon will be just fine. You know what, had he said that, there would have been no baptizing that night. What I want you to think about is the one talent, the thing that you feel like has no value to it. But what it did, I believe, with Kent, I don't believe there would have been anything wrong with him saying, you know, okay, I think I'll do it tomorrow. But there's a verse that I want to think about. The kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. Having a passion about what I'm doing. Yes. And I saw that in him that night. I believe that's what we saw. Was, you know what, I'm on the run now. I have escaped the devil's grasp. And if I have an opportunity to go to the next step, I'll take care of it right now. And he did that. And so his dad was going to go get dressed, you know, to be able to baptize him. And I believe that both of them had it in their mind that this is what it'll be. I need to baptize my son and we'll get on the bed tonight. But there is a verse, because there's something about being passionate. And I don't believe Kent had any thought at all but that he'd be the only one and we'll be through with it tonight. But I am desiring to get this done tonight. I want to be moving on with the Lord. There are scriptures in the Old Testament that say the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. It happened with Samson, something that he couldn't do on his own. The Spirit of the Lord came upon. And you know what? I think that's what happened in that service, was the Spirit of the Lord came upon that little service right there. And I believe every one of us would agree, there would have been no service had he not spoken up with passion and said, folks, I need to take care of this thing tonight. I'd like to do it tonight. And then because of that, others saw that level of commitment, that level of a desire to show the Lord, Lord, things are going to be different out in the future. And it sparked an interest. That should he have said, and I believe definite, sure, there would have been no baptizing service that night if he had not spoke up and said, count me in, I need it tonight. Well, just like this lad with the 5, with the loaves and the fishes, there's not a thing that he could do to multiply what he was handing in. And I don't believe Kent had any thought about it multiplying either. But what I'd like for us to think about is, what we may consider is just one talent and there's nothing to it, what could it even help anybody else? It's not about that anyhow. It's about me having a passion in my service for the Lord. Because you know what? When I have it, it sparks over. It's that cup that runs over. And somebody else gets, the fire hits them. And they say, you know what? I want to be something more than just a regular Christian too. I want to have a part with that. And I believe that's what we saw. Well, now the camp meeting is over. And everybody's going back home to different places. So now what good is one talent? What can we do with one talent then? I'd like to look at a verse in Galatians. Because I believe the Lord still has a desire to take somebody that has one talent, be able to do something with it that would be a help to others. In Galatians 6 and 10, start with the ninth verse. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. To young people and to the rest of us alike, camp meeting's over now. I believe it would be taking that one talent, being able to do something with it, that we through this next year, we look around as we have therefore opportunity. Let's do good to someone. I've thought about just over the last few weeks, we have a neighbor man that I had a calf get out and lost it. So I called around to see if I could find it. I hadn't talked to this man for quite a while. And when I talked to him, he told me, he said, my wife died a couple of days ago. And the emotion was still in his voice. And so I talked to Cheryl about it. I said, you know what, let's go by there and see him. Just take him a loaf of bread. And you know, those little things, the things that we say, I only have one talent. What good would it do? You know what? It made a difference with him. And I would like for us to be, this next year, myself included, is where there's big things that make big changes, that I would be looking for small things. Anywhere that I can be an example to somebody else. And here is saying, as we have opportunity, and for me to, instead of saying, well, I only have one talent and it wouldn't do any good, is that I would be looking around for that opportunity. Because I believe God will open it up for us to be able to be a help to others. There's another one that I'd like to look at in 2 Corinthians in the ninth chapter. Because it will be a help to us too. Because you know what? I can live a life just to myself. I can say, well, you know what? I want to make heaven my home for myself, and that is real important. But you know what? It is a benefit to us when I reach out and I feed someone else with that. I wonder what that little boy thought when his little few barley loaves and fish all of a sudden started multiplying, and him realizing, you know what? If I hadn't have handed him that loaf and bread, he'd had to start with nothing. He had something to be able to work from. In the ninth chapter and in the sixth verse, but this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And we're not, sometimes we'll look at those and say, well, that's talking about giving money. But I believe it goes into so many other areas of me giving of myself. And I was thinking, we heard about it this morning, and I believe in Sunday school, a man that gave, and he didn't see, before his death, he didn't see anything come from it. And that was Stephen in the seventh chapter of Acts. When he gave, preached his message to the people, and it upset them so much that they were going to stone him. Took him out to stone him. And at the same time, 7:58, there was somebody that watched that, stood there. He was a part of it. It says, cast Stephen out of the city, stoned him, 58th verse of 7th chapter. And the witnesses laid down their clothes at a young man's feet, whose name was Saul. And they stoned Stephen, calling upon God and saying, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. You know, I wonder what that did to Saul, watching that. He didn't repent that evening and get saved. But I can't help but think sometimes at night that he thought about that. Because he didn't revile him. Stephen didn't say, I tell you what, y'all are going to get it for this. Punishment's coming to you. In fact, in that next verse, he said he kneeled down. He cried with a loud voice, saying, Lord, lay not this sin to their charge. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. I wonder if those words repeated themselves to Saul, who later became Paul. Because one day he turned his heart to the Lord. So maybe Stephen would say, you know what, it seems like a wasted life here. I'm fixing to lose my life for it. But because of the example that he gave, I believe it was also a help to Paul. I heard this during Monarch, and I guess I hadn't thought about it before. You know, with only one talent, what could we do to be able to help change laws of the land? As I was hearing them talk about that, thought about the three Hebrew children. They had no idea that what's fitting to happen to them would make a change in the country that they were in. I'd like to look at that one because it impressed me. As we look at one talent, here's just three men that's fitting to be punished if they don't bow down. In Daniel, in the third chapter, you know, after he looks, the king looks in there, and now there's four men in the fire. His attitude changes about it. And in the 26th verse, I'd like to read a few verses here. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, and he spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then they came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes, the governors, the captains, the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose body the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed upon them. Now, they're not just a little one-talent person. They're in front of a lot of people, being able to be a witness. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him. You know, just a few minutes ago, he was letting them know, here's what you're going to worship. You're going to bow down to this golden image and worship it. And now he's changed. It says, has delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word. What was the king's word before? Either you bow down or you lose your life. Now he's thinking different. And yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. You know, that was a long time ago. I believe it's just as important today for us in 2012 to just, with one talent that we have, to go along and live faithful to the Lord. That the people looking on would know, you know what? These folks are not going to change. They have made a determination. They're not going to bow down to the gods of this world. They're going to live faithful to the Lord. And by doing that, this king said in the 29th verse, Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces. Their houses shall be made dunghill. Because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Now what a change it brought in him. Now you know what, we may not in 2012 be able to make much change in the laws of the country. But it's just as important with the little one talent that I have, and I don't believe I can do it as good as others, to say one thing I can do is I can stand for the Lord. I'm not going to bow down to the gods of this world. And then there was another example that was given in the 6th chapter. This one was with Daniel. We've read this, but I had never really noticed that at the end of it all, the big change that it made. 6th chapter, you remember, 6th verse through the 10th verse, where it's saying the men were jealous of Daniel and the standing that he had. And so they said, we cannot find any fault. This would be a good spot for me to desire to be. The people looking on my life that would like to cause trouble, and look in this fourth verse. The presidents and the princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. If somebody wanted to look on your life to find a fault with it, what if the only thing they could find was what they found with Daniel? They could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault in him. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel. We might as well quit looking, because he's a faithful man. We'll not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So then they thought of this plan and went to the king and told him, King Darius, live forever. Sixth verse. And all of them, says all the presidents of the kingdom, governors, princes, counselors, captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. And something responded in that king's heart, boy, that sounds pretty good to me. But you know what? None of that shook Daniel. And I think about Daniel. Here he had been, his place where he lived had been conquered. He was brought as a slave. You would think there's not a whole lot he can do. But what he did do was be faithful. He could have said when the law was made, don't you pray to any other god but King Darius. If you got any questions, if you got any desires, you come to him. And instead, he's still just like he had been doing the days before. That's how they found it out about him, was he was opening up his window to pray before time. And now he continues to do it. He does not change. So when they came and said, okay, we have found a guy that's not doing it. And I believe the king then realized, I've been trapped. And remember, he did what he could to try to keep that from happening. And they said, oh, no. You remember, once you make a seal like that, you can't back up on it. Well, when Daniel was thrown into the lion's den and was faithful through that, just like it was with the three Hebrew children, when that one ended, it was similar. In the 25th verse of that one, 6 and 25. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages. Look how this one little talent, this slave boy, that had really not a big realm of influence, now it all goes out. That dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. And his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs. It made quite an impression on this king when he sees what he's able to do for Daniel. Worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in the earth, and hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius. Being able to make a change. I believe there was a change made Saturday night because one person had a passion that they said, you know what, I don't want to just, well, maybe I won't even do it this year. Maybe I'll do it next year. But with passion, he said, you know what, I want to take care of this right now. There was another man that did it, Joshua. You remember he came to him, Joshua 24, and he said, choose this day. Is it going to be the gods that we served over on the other side? As for me and my house, I've made up my mind. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. A firm decision. And now I want to bring it down to where we are today. Do you think that by living right in 2012 that those up in high authority are going to say, you know what, we're going to change the laws. We're going to do like Daniel did. It may never happen. But I tell you what, it's going to be just as important for me to be just as faithful as they were. Because this past week, there's been something that has made an impression on me. Last week, the owner of Chick-fil-A, he just made a statement that he stood where the Bible stands about gay marriage. Now, he didn't go off on some tangent of his own and say, I have come up with a concoction about it. He just said, I believe that the Bible's right about that subject, and I stand that way. And it caused an uproar. That is hate speech that he is making. Why would you say something like that against these people? And if you read what he said, he wasn't belligerent about it. In fact, he wasn't even asking to be on a talk show so he could tell the world about it. I think he would a lot rather have just kept on making chicken sandwiches and not get involved in it all. But when he was asked, and I believe it was by a religious publication that asked him, where do you stand? He just calmly stated, here's where I stand. You know what? In 2012, we may think we only have one talent. It's going to be real important. I don't even know his name, who he was. But you know what? His stand was very important. Because in the last few months, I have heard so many news articles telling me that the majority, and it's fast becoming more of a majority, are all for this. And it's almost told in a way, why would you take a stand against such a thing when so many people are for it today? But you know what, this man, he didn't say, well, I'll tell you what, before I make a statement about where I stand, I need to make a poll and see how many people in the United States would support me in this, because this could cause me trouble. Instead, just one person just want to tell you, I stand where the Bible stands. He wasn't belligerent about it. He didn't say, I tell you what, I no longer will serve a chicken sandwich to one of them. No, he just stated that in my personal life, I back what the Bible said. And then when that uproar came, and then last Wednesday night, there were people that I heard that ate so many chicken sandwiches that day to just say, hey, folks, he stood where the Bible stands, and I'd like to be in support of that. Hear on the news about lines coming out of Chick-fil-A and down the road for blocks. People, not because, you know what, I haven't had a chicken sandwich in a long time, but I would like to also, with my little one talent that I wouldn't be able to reach out to anybody else, I'd like to be able to say, I stand where the Bible stands too. And he was, this man, Chick-fil-A, was willing to make a stand. You know, where would we be today if those in authority, surely there's somebody up there that believes what Chick-fil-A owner believes, but won't say a word. Goes along with the flow to where it makes it look like everybody is for it. I believe we're in a time where I don't want to go bury my little one talent. I believe it's going to be important wherever you go that you not bow down to the pressures that are around us, but that you have a firm conviction in your heart. This is what is right. I don't go out in people's faces with it, nor will I bow. Because I tell you, that wasn't just way back there with the three Hebrew children where the fire was made and said, if you don't bow down to this one, it's going to cost you. We're living in the time today that I believe the same statement is being made to us, is this one you're going to bow down to. But I'm glad that there was a man that had some kind of conviction that he was willing to say, I stand where the Bible stands. And I believe it's going to be important for us children as you go to school next year and out in the future, as you get the pressure applied to you, that you've got to accept the wickedness that is in the world around us, that you would realize, you know what, I don't have big talents. I won't be able to go out and sway a lot of people, but I tell you what, those few that I have an influence, the power of influence. I believe there was power in the influence of Kent Saturday night. I believe people caught on to his passion. I want it. Now, this is just, maybe you saw it as something different. I saw it as, you know what, we would all been in bed by 11:30, or the young people, they were going to go to some get-together that night for a wiener roast. And instead, at 1 o'clock in the morning, somebody had a whole bunch of hot dogs that had not been eaten, because this passion caught fire with us too. And we want to be able to make a statement myself. I'm committed this year to serving the Lord. I want to live for Him. I want to please Him. There's a little piece of a song, and I believe it's good for us in 2012. Meekly hold the true position, standing firm. I believe that's what this man did. I don't know what his religious convictions are, but I believe he's got a good grip on the Bible here of saying, this is where I stand with this. There's a song that the children sing, dare to be a Daniel, dare to stand alone, dare to have a purpose true, and dare to make it known. I believe when we are trying in 2012, when the pressure is being applied, to be quiet, go along with it, you're outnumbered anyhow. For us to be willing, as the three Hebrew children did, as Daniel did, to have a conviction that was built from a long time ago. We don't want to start just in 2012. I had no convictions before, but I want to start building now. I want to have a solid foundation for when these things come against me that I'll be able to stand. I'd like for us in closing to sing, I think it's in the blue book, kind of a children's song again. I have decided to follow Jesus. There's a piece of that says, though none go with me, still I'll follow. We don't have to take a poll and say, okay, I'm finding out that 60% of the Americans are for this, so are believing in the Bible, so I'm going to believe in the Bible. No, I believe in it because it's right. Kent that night didn't say, tell you what, folks, if I could find 20 people that'd be baptized with me, I'd like to do it tonight. You know, he didn't care if nobody else did. It's just this passion is burning in me that I want to move to the next step tonight. I don't want to wait anymore. We may not see the loss of the land change because of us standing, but it's going to be good for us to stand anyhow and be faithful. It'll pay in the end. I'll say a prayer.